ceramic star in the dark story of a man with astonishing malevolent powers. A man with the Medusa touch. What unspeakable evil lives on beyond life itself?
Somewhere deep within what's left of that brain, something is going on. It's grown stronger almost every hour.
An evil living on to culminate in a lifetime of terror with one final horrifying act. Richard Burton, Lee Remick, and Lino Ventura star in The Medusa Touch.
Is anyone going to be able to hear that?
Yes, it registered.
It registered?
Yes.
All right, because that was, I mean.
I've got my headphones on.
We've been going lo-fi here, I know, yes. But that was as
that was on,
thin
that was,
and tinny as it can be.
Well, it's coming out of my phone from YouTube, but, summer reminds me of, when I was a little kid, my parents would send me off to spend a week in Warner Robins, Georgia with Angelinas and Jimmy. And one of the things that
alone?
Yeah.
They would care for you?
Yeah.
Alone?
Yeah. They could manage. And
how did that work?
It was, it was fun.
Y'all don't know Angelinas and Jimmy. I do.
Well, you knew them very old. They were younger then, obviously.
And they were capable?
They were capable.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, one of my favorite things to do is to sort of like sneak out late at night and go to their living room and watch the CBS late movie.
Wait, after they went to bed?
Yeah.
And they never caught you?
Sometimes, yes.
Would they make you go back to bed?
Yes.
How old are you?
It's like 9, But yeah, so the CBS late movie to me just represented this like level of freedom,
But Angelinas and Jimmy, I must stay up and watch, who is it, Lee Remick? I must watch Lee Remick in the CBS late movie. Don't you understand? I'm a normal 9-year-old boy. With normal 9-year-old boy needs.
The biggest bundle of them Lee all Remick. Is coming on.
Lee Remick films are super important to me and all of my other 9-year-old boy friends.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, but I loved the CBS late movie. So summer made me think about it, and I'll tell you, I can go into a like network movie, premiere bumper K hole on YouTube, the ABC Friday night movie and the the NBC.
You're talking big event. Specifically about opening credits, opening sequences,
yeah, from the 70s,
intros like that. Thing that we just for other movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even so much about the movies. It's just the whole sort of network promo intro itself,
Right.
The ABC Friday night movie. Da, 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 that thing. So, anyway. It's my Proust's Madeleine.
This is we went on and on last week about my childhood obsession with Saturday and Sunday.
Matinees.
Kitty matinees. Yes.
So mine was more about TV. Yeah. Anyway.
It surprises me, really, that you didn't do the same thing that I did.
I don't know that.
Did they not do
I don't,
that?
I don't, know that, I don't know that maybe we didn't have the kitty matinees in the theaters.
How could that not have happened?
I don't know.
I lived in a little town.
Like, there were kid movies I remember go to. Like, you ask my brothers and sisters, and they'll tell you the horror stories of being forced by my mother to take me to see Pippi Longstocking.
Right. Now, where was that playing in what context?
I think it was playing like a regular run. Maybe not like a full day run, but I think like it played daily. It wasn't like you had to go on Saturday. I don't really have a memory of Saturday matinees.
You mean there were evening shows?
No. Like I say, I don't think it played all day, but I think I get played like at 3 o'clock every day of the week or something.
By the way.
Yes. Not so close to your mic.
Anybody out there who has not seen the original Pippi Longstocking films.
Dubbed
badly into English. Notably, the first one, Pippi Longstocking.
Yes.
You are missing one of the most...
One of the landmarks of Swedish cinema.
Mind-shredding examples of childhood surrealism that you will ever encounter.
Mm.
And I can't recommend it strongly enough. It is... It's bat-ish insane.
Yeah, and don't and mess around with that American remake they did.
Absolutely watchable. Completely demented, completely weird, colorful and stupid and confusing and
non-linear.
And the dubbed adult vocals of children are maybe my favorite thing in the movie.
One of my favorite descriptions of how those go, I don't have it in front of me, but I think in Son of Golden Turkey Awards, the Medveds write about how the actors' mouths will say something along the lines of, hey hoody 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 hey, and the voice will just be, hello.
But it won't just be hello, it'll be, and I'm going to stand back from the microphone to do this, it'll be like, hello, Pippi Longstocking! Hello, we are your friends! Pippi Longstocking! Just like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's like those it's like those Japanese movies where the kids do nothing but shout all the time.
It is the weirdest, yeah. It's all shouting, all grown-ups approximating the cadence
shrill pitch voices,
of like a six-year-old. It's You gotta go get it.
Yeah, is it on DVD? We have like a crappy VHS that we've found. So I mean, it might not even be on DVD because these should be. It's like how when they
need to see these.
It's like when they reissue.
This isn't the DVD recommendation of the week, but it's an extra special recommendation.
when they reissued the first season of Sesame Street on DVD and it actually says on it, not for children. I think that's how you'd have to package Pippi Longstocking too, because the messages are terrible. You know, it's all about, yes, destroy things. It's fun.
Right.
You know, anyway. Well, if you didn't know already, you are listening to Linoleum Knife.
Oh, yeah.
Across the table from me is Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
And you're Alonzo Duralde, and you're the boss now. You are like, okay. You go in and out of writing
employment.
You go in and out of writing film reviews for an actual living.
Uh-huh.
I've done it virtually nonstop for the past almost 12 years now. I can't get studio publicists to remember my name after 12 years. And suddenly, fancy therap.com and the Reuters feed pickup turns you into Lord God King Alonzo Duralde. People call him on the phone. They're like, oh, we'd love to take you to lunch.
Stop.
We want to take you, the film critic, to lunch. And, you know, everybody knows your name now because you're Mr. Reuters. I'm not jealous or anything. I don't really care. I just think it's funny. Like, suddenly, like, it's all about who employs you.
Yeah, it's not me. It's the outlet.
It's all about who employs you. It's suddenly you're the man. Yeah.
Well,
am I too close to the mic? Are you turning me down? Is that what's happening?
No. I'm turning me down. So we're both similar, but you were too close before.
Got it.
I'm the film critic for TheWrap.com and for What the Flick.
Also for What the Flick, where you can actually see his face.
Yes.
And you can also join in the YouTube wave of commentary hate.
Yes.
For him.
Yes.
But we would love it if you would comment, if you would YouTube love him.
I'm going to break myself of the habit of reading internet comments.
You should.
I need to.
You should, you know.
There's no good can come of it, frankly.
Well, like I said to you 3 hours ago while we were waiting for Winnie the Pooh to start.
Yes. Which we'll be talking about next week.
Anybody who thinks you're awesome is going to find you and tell you that. They might say it on YouTube also. But if they really think you're awesome, they're going to find you, like on Facebook. It ain't hard to find you on Facebook.
Yeah, indeed.
You're the only Alonzo Duralde on Facebook. Alonzo with an S. And they'll find you, and they will tell you, and that you never have to wade through the muck to get to.
I don't just read them for like, oh, I hope someone says something nice about me.
Oh, that's why I would read them.
Well, no, I mean,
I want to be praised.
Sometimes
anybody wants to praise me. My Facebook name is Dave White, and I'm connected to Alonzo Duralde.
Well, like,
I love to be praised.
For instance, when I was looking at the comments of my Harry Potter review that ran on the Wrap, and we'll be talking about that next week too.
Right.
And somebody pointed out that I got the name of the candy store wrong, so I went back and fixed it.
You know? Right.
But they did it in a very nice nice way, and they were like, "You jerk, you know anything?" You know, they were very.
Don't you know anything
exactly
about Harry
Pardon
Potter?
Pardon me, sure. no, they were very polite, and I went back and I changed.
What did you
it.
Call the name of the candy store?
I called it Honeydews and not Honeydukes. And you know what? Frankly,
you're pathetic.
I'm going to go back and look at my original copy because that smacks of the kind of thing that like a copy editor would fix. And
do
not
they,
know.
Do they have a copy?
I don't know. I work at home. I have no idea what goes on in that office. I'm sure they have, you know, they're hardworking.
They must have a copy editor. They're a real operation.
Yeah.
They must have a copy editor.
Anyway. So sometimes, you know, I actually get something valuable out of comments. But yeah, for the most part, 90% is like, you suck. You think everything should be an Oscar-winning drama. Nah, nah, nah. Go watch some depressing foreign movies. We like to have fun at the film.
What I love about that comment in particular, you think everything should be an Oscar-winning drama.
Oscar-winning dramas are terrible.
The Oscars are jive, and yeah. It doesn't matter. Oscar-winning dramas are crap, too.
Yeah, I want more of the King's speech. No, thanks. Well, one was plenty.
I enjoyed the King's speech.
It was fine. It was just... It was a well-made film.
It taught me some speech therapy things to say.
You are a thistle sifter.
I'm a thistle sifter. I sift thistles. I forgot what I was saying. Oh, yeah.
Internet.
Screw people.
Yeah.
You know, just if you want people to say nice things to you, they'll wait around. They will.
And if you would like to say nice things about us over on iTunes, where you may or may not have downloaded,
did you know
show,
apparently that actually means something?
What?
Like praise, like good reviews on iTunes. iTunes actually means something to iTunes
in terms of.
Someone told me this.
Like, what, you get better placement or something?
Something like that. Yeah.
All right. Well, please.
I mean, they could be wrong. I might have heard it wrong, but that's what somebody told me.
Please, Linoleum Knife listeners, if you wish and have the wherewithal. Go to iTunes and say nice things if you like this show. And if you don't, keep it to yourself.
Hey, should we talk about the forthcoming project?
Not yet.
Well, can't we say it's coming in a few weeks?
Wait, I don't know what we're talking about then.
The thing that Graham was going to come over and show us.
Oh, that's not coming in a few weeks.
That is.
No.
If he teaches us how to do the thing, it'll come in a few weeks.
That's going to be a while away.
You think?
I think. We'll talk about it later. Not to be all mysterious, folks.
We have a mysterious surprise coming.
So mysterious. Oh, yeah. My God.
It's going to be great.
Yes, it is. But we'll tell you about it when it's actually really happening. What are we talking about this week?
Horrible bosses.
And Zookeeper and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Horrible Bosses. Like the similarly titled Bad Teacher of a few weeks ago, does not deliver on the horribleness as much as it ought to, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if it's a movie about downtrodden, you know, laborers and murder, then I don't think it's crazy of me to think, hey, this should maybe be, a dark comedy.
Real dark, yeah.
It ain't. It's not dark. It's funny.
I think it's being sold as a dark
Yeah, because it's a dark comedy premise, but they don't deliver on that. Yeah. I did laugh. I laughed consistently. I laughed more than I did at Bad Teacher. I wasn't hating it.
It was funnier than Bad Teacher.
It's funnier than Bad Teacher, yeah. No question. Yeah. But it has a similar, as I said, failure of nerve, which is kind of a drag.
I think, well, do you want to, I mean, how important is it for us to give synopses? Do we think that people don't know what these movies are about when they're listening to us?
Give a quickie. You know, basically, okay, it's
Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, and Jason Bateman want to kill their bosses.
Right, and they go to a seedy bar and meet up with ex-con Jamie Foxx, who basically tells them to avoid...
Whose name is M.F. Jones.
Yes, because his real name is Dean Jones, but that was because of the Disney guy, that wasn't bad enough for the streets, so he changed it. And so basically he tells them to avoid suspicion, they should try murdering each other's bosses, which leads to wacky comedic hijinks and stuff.
What I was wondering about that idea is that it doesn't matter if they kill each other's bosses, because everyone will know that they're friends.
That's true, yeah.
The minute an investigation begins,
yeah.
It was like, oh, you're friends with the guy and the thing. And
yeah,
the,
in yeah, fact, in
like,
the trailer...
Oh, okay, well, this is a conspiracy, you're all going to jail.
In the trailer, when you see them get called into the police station, all three of them are there. So, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's not a very good way to cover your tracks, frankly. and then the horrible bosses themselves, like, you know, Kevin Spacey is a... you know, jerk who makes Jason Bateman work a lot to get this promotion that he doesn't give him. And
he's being a less mean version of the guy he was
in Swimming with Sharks.
Swimming with Sharks.
But, you know,
from like 20 years ago.
Basically. Something like that, yeah. We saw that movie in Dallas. Yeah. Well, no, more like...
It was like 92, 15. 93.
Was it? Oh, you're right. Yeah. Well, that's true. Early
90s.
That was when I lived here the first time. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. And frankly, I would much rather see Kevin Spacey in this kind of role than...
Than any other role.
Than any other role. Yeah. Like, if I have to remotely sympathize with him, it's over. You know, as long as...
Yeah, that's impossible.
If he's being a total jerk, then I'm in. And then Jennifer Aniston is the Charlie Day's dentist boss who's constantly sexually harassing him. And I didn't buy her for a second. I didn't buy the character. I mean, Aniston's funny, but like, I just didn't...
You don't think there are rapey ladies out there?
I don't think there are rapey, super smoking, hot, sexy ladies who are going after people that look like Charlie Day.
If you can imagine it, it exists somewhere. And we will... We will discuss the whether or not she would go for Charlie Day thing in a second.
Well, I mean, I see there's the whole power dynamic, but she's the movie shows us being like that, her being like that with other people as well.
Correct.
And it felt too much like straight guy fantasy to me than a character that I bought. Even in the context of a
the fantasy like is one. The joke, though. The fantasy is the joke. I know of a woman who saw the film who hated it because she, you know, was very angry about the way that women were
portrayed
and treated in the film. And she said, well, it should have been Lisa Kudrow. And I said, well, okay, yes, you buy Lisa Kudrow as a mean person better than you buy Jennifer Aniston as a mean person. But guys don't want to get with Lisa Kudrow. They want to get with Jennifer Aniston,
right? But the movie operates with that fantasy and is excoriating her for it and like making her somebody who they want to kill at the same time.
She's awful. She's awful, and she rapes people. That's established in the film. She's an actual rapist. She puts people under for dentist reasons and does it with them.
I don't want to get into spoiler territory.
That happens. Well, I'm sorry, that's a spoiler. But I think
that was a fake thing she did to set up a blackmail.
Oh, you think she simulated sex when she had the opportunity to have real sex?
Yeah. Because I think because if that were the case, then she would continue doing that to him rather than vamp him in real life.
No. No.
I don't know. It didn't work for me, but obviously you're...
Sorry for the spoiler. It's a minor one.
Yeah, it is. Your mileage may vary on that one. And then Colin Farrell as the sort of comb-over cokehead, you know...
Louse. Yeah. Gross guy.
His role felt truncated to me.
Yeah, like they cut him out of the movie a lot. They cut a lot of him out.
Yeah. I mean, like there are scenes in the closing credits of like a deleted scene.
There's a deleted scene with him,
and seeing that kind of the movie, and it kind of made me realize, oh wait a minute, you know what? Now that I think about it, this performance feels like it had a lot of deleted scenes. Like he's really not in it very much at all. They didn't do much with him.
Yeah.
I did laugh. I'll give the movie credit for that. And
I laughed a lot.
Yeah,
like from start to finish, I laughed. Yeah,
but it just.
But what I mostly laughed at was. The sort of bumbling interaction and the arguing between
the three guys.
Their friendship and attacking of each other and inability to get the job done on any level and getting in each other's way and stumbling over each other. That was the funniest stuff in the movie. Charlie Day, in particular, is like the MVP of this movie. He is the most manic, nervous, twitchy, upset guy, and his voice, I can't even do his I did the Pippi Longstocking kids a second ago, so I guess I could do his voice, but he goes up into a register that I only hear in like dog whistles in my dreams. Like he's such a high pitch squealer,
and then to have Jason Bateman doing his sort of like deadpan slow burn
deadpan, balance of that is, you know, is looking really, at things funny and stuff. That stuff was really good. Here's my biggest problem with the movie. All the laughs, they're very funny, but again, just like Bad Teacher, just like The Hangover Part 2, just like a lot of other movies that I have, you know, really laughed a lot at. And I'll even say things like Your Highness and Get Him to the Greek, stuff like that. They're empty. They're about nothing. And on one level, that's okay with me. Right. On one level, the walking into a dark room and sitting for 100 minutes and going, ha, 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 and then walking out and going, what was that? I don't remember what I just looked at.
They don't build anything.
It doesn't bother me. Like, I don't let it get me too down, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an easy laugh. I'll laugh at terrible things. We're about to discuss about Zookeeper, yes. Where I laughed much more often than I should have. But when I think back to a movie like 9 to 5, or when I think of even terrible movies that are about the same thing, like Take This Job and Shove It, for example. I saw that film a long time ago. There used to be a place for
being about something.
Genuine anger,
yeah,
about the world of work.
Yeah, and Gray pointed out on What the Flick this week, she was guesting, and she said that, oh, it's the male 9 to 5, and it didn't occur to me at the time to say, but yeah, but in 9 to 5, that movie's actually about how women get mistreated in the workplace, and it sort of presents a kind of alternate version where when they take over, they actually make substantial changes and really, you know, address those inequities in the workplace. And this movie never has that kind of sense or smartness to it. It's just like, oh, these people are terrible. Let's try and kill them.
Three middle-class white guys with stable employment. The only thing standing between them and what they perceive to be deserved further success,
right,
is this mean person.
Right.
So that person has to die.
Yeah.
And again, I'm okay with that. But if that's as deep as you're going to go, if you're not going to talk about what a horrible world it is outside now, mm-hmm, for anybody with a job working anywhere, and how terrified everybody is and how angry people are about the way, you know, American productivity is up and yet wages are down and benefits are being cut.
They throw in that one character, the guy who went to Yale and worked for Lehman Brothers and is now giving old fashions in the men's room.
Right.
But that's it. That's very fleeting.
It's a real throwaway thing. And it reminded me in a way of, and I wouldn't have been upset if they had done this, The Other Guys.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the closing credits.
The closing credits, right, gave you all of this crazy political statistics in graph form and chart form.
Animated, yeah.
Animated, and gave you everything that the movie just studiously ignored.
Yeah.
The movie was all about the jokes, and then what the underpinning of the movie.
It's kind
of
like, now here are the footnotes.
And now here are the footnotes. I thought that was kind of funny.
Remind me, I'm going to look for that on YouTube, and if I can find it, I'll put it on our Facebook page.
Yeah. I thought that was actually kind of a funny,
it was brilliant,
thing to do at the end of that movie. You could have done the same thing at the end of this.
Sure.
And it would have been funny. They would have made it funny.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They didn't bother.
No. They weren't thinking about it.
They went for the joke, and that was fine, and that's what they do good. That's what they do well. Mm-hmm. And they do that real good.
Yeah.
That's what they do well. And I laughed, but
Another movie it reminded me of, and I'm about to get real esoteric here, because this movie never actually got a U.S. release. I saw it at the USA Film Festival in Dallas a couple of years ago, is this French film called The Axe that's based this Donald Westlake novel, and it's about this sort of middle manager at a paper company who gets downsized, and when another job that's similar to what he does comes up, he basically goes out of his way to find all the competition and kill them. So, you know, it's this movie where this guy's willing to, like, commit these horrible crimes just to get the same crappy job that he had before, not even for, like, any sort of great riches or whatever. And the novel is really good. In fact, I was they were doing a Donald Westlake tribute, and so I was writing a thing about it, and I did some research, and actually Tarantino is a big fan of the book, and I was kind of hoping he would get the movie, which Costa Gavras directed, you know, might help get it released in the U.S. But anyway, terrific movie. I don't know if it, you know, maybe if you get that, you know, that
French language channel that we had for a while, TV Plus
or whatever it's called. Yeah, they might be showing.
All they show on that are like the crappy modern French action movies that we never see.
But I think actually The Axe did come on at some point when we had that channel. Anyway.
The best thing about that channel was the Fantomas movies.
And they showed, like, they showed old Jacques Tati shorts sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
But yeah, it was mostly not worth the...
Not worth the 15 extra bucks a month.
Not worth the cable bill. L'argent that it cost us.
But yeah, it's like, there's... I just saw A Better Life yesterday, and I'll just go and talk about that right now in the context of this. You know, you want to see a movie about people struggling,
the grim economic with their jobs.
You want to see a movie about people with a bad situation on their hands in the world of work. Watch A Better Life. It stars, I'm going to screw up his name, Damien Bichir. I don't know how you say his name.
Spell it.
Bichir. He plays the drug lord on Weeds.
Bichir, I guess.
He was Fidel Castro in Che. But he's this illegal immigrant who works as a gardener. And it's a loose remake of The Bicycle Thief. And
he gets a truck, right?
He buys a truck from his boss. His boss is quitting the gardening business and going to go have his own farm out in the Inland Empire. And so he buys the truck, and the truck is immediately stolen by a guy that he thought was one of his friends. And then you find out that the guy that stole the truck had this whole other reason that he had to do it, and it's crushing every step of the way. It doesn't, you know, obviously when I say it's a loose remake of The Bicycle Thief, it's not. It ain't no Bicycle Thief. I mean, you know, The Bicycle Thief, you know,
it's one of the landmarks of world cinema.
Know, changed the language of cinema, yeah. You know, but and this doesn't, but it's still a really affecting, really sad movie about what it's like to have to work and struggle and on top of it to, you know, be illegal and to be sort of like, to have no choice to be illegal because your kid is going to starve if you don't cross the desert. You know, like, it's this whole, like, I've got to feed my child. I've got to take care of my child. And the mom runs away. If you are a naturally depressed person, do not see A Better Life. See it if you are generally a happy person so that you can walk out of it when you're done and go, whew, I need a Cinnabon to shake that off, because that's how I felt yesterday when I left.
And yet there is no Cinnabon anymore.
I saw it at the West Side Pavilion, where they shot the interior mall sequences of Clueless, yes. And where they shot Tom Petty's Free Fallen video, by the way. And where they used to have a Cinnabon, and they don't have a Cinnabon anymore.
Bastards.
It's completely boarded up. There's going to be some sunglass hut or something taking its place. The world does not need more sunglasses. The world needs more cinnamon rolls. Exactly. Yes.
And we did our part to keep that place open.
I totally did my part. Every time I walked by, I stopped and enjoyed a Cinnabon. I won't call it what Louis C.K. calls it. Although, if you go to YouTube and type in Louis C.K. and Cinnabon, you will get the nastiest, meanest, funniest description of A, what a Cinnabon is, and B, what you are for eating them that I have ever heard. And I love that man. I am in love with him, I think.
They reran his Fresh Air interview yesterday, and I got to go online and hear it, because I just caught like a few minutes of it.
Yeah, there's nobody cooler. I think he's so rad. And but anyway, getting back to Horrible Bosses, what you didn't get here is anything else except that.
And they could have addressed that stuff and still be funny.
They didn't have to get heavy about it. Now, the women.
Yeah, there are four.
There are four of them with dialogue.
Yeah, and they're all. I've broken this down elsewhere, but if you missed it, it's Mantrap Dentist, Blank Faced Fiance, Serial Adulterous Wife, and Fat Chick Who Everybody Thinks Is Pregnant.
Right.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Those are the women of Horrible Bosses.
And I will say that my friend who hated the movie because of this is absolutely right.
Yeah.
And There's really no, I mean,
all, it does not pass the Bechdel test.
The best you can say, what is the Bechdel test to tell them?
It's from an old Alison Bechdel cartoon. She said that she had a character who said, I only see movies where there are A, two women who talk to each other about B, something besides a man.
Right. And so, it's, if there's anything valuable about the way that this movie portrays female characters, it's as sort of like a study in what happens when guys who refuse to be, you know, self-aware about their relationships to women write a script.
Yeah,
because it's very much a,
this isn't just a movie about male anxiety. It's a product of it.
It is a product of male anxiety. Yeah. It's like, oh, girls are scary, and I don't know. I like Jennifer Aniston. I really wish she'd come to my room at 9. But then if she ever did and was like, "All right, let's go, do it, do me," you'd be like, running out the window.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about that.
Moving on, Zookeeper.
Burn. Zookeeper.
Zookeeper was a movie I thought I would loathe, and I
only mildly disliked it.
Yeah. So, huzzah. As you probably know from the trailers, Kevin James plays a zookeeper who has been unlucky in love, and the zoo animals, who have been secretly speaking in English for years, decide to communicate with him to help him out with his love problems.
The lion is Sylvester Stallone.
The lioness
is Cher.
Right.
The monkey is Adam Sandler.
Doing a voice. The bears are Faison Love and Jon Favreau. The elephant is Judd Apatow.
The giraffe is Maya Rudolph.
The wolf is the UFC fighter
is
guy.
Is that a Baz? I'm going to get his name here in just a second.
Melman?
I blanked on his. I'm blanking on his name. I know who he is. It's like Baz or Nos.
The crow is Jim Brewer. Is that the guy from Half Baked?
Yeah.
Baz Rutten,
whatever. And Don Rickles is the frog.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it's just, I thought it was just this kind of sort of like, all right, kids generally like talking animal movies, and grown-ups like not very good rom-coms, and this movie is both of those things, and I don't know if it's supposed to sort of like, so families can feel like it's a part of it that they're interested in, or they have some
stake in it.
It's a
movie for everyone. In bits pieces. And pieces, yes.
But there were like, I would say there were two scenes that were good enough to make me leave the theater not totally like wanting to throw myself in front of a bus. One of them, oddly enough, is the flagrant product placement scene where Kevin James and the Nick Nolte gorilla talking, Nick Nolte voiced gorilla, go to TGI Fridays.
And they trash the place.
They don't really trash them.
Yeah, they do.
They party on.
They party on and they smash things.
A few things, but yeah. They don't go totally Pippi Longstocking.
Okay, no, they don't do it like Pippi Longstocking.
No. And then there's a scene where the Kevin James character's brother gets married and he takes Rosario Dawson as his date to try and make the girl that he's really interested in jealous, even though he should totally be with Rosario Dawson because she's so awesome and she's a veterinarian.
She is so awesome.
She is, actually.
I mean, that is actual perfect casting. Because if you want to have, you know, the chick on the side who's waiting in the wings, who's clearly outstanding.
Who's Miss Wright.
On every level. Your first choice has got to always be Rosario Dawson. Because not only is she gorgeous.
She's game.
But she's a total dude. Like, she is the coolest.
Tell them about Comic-Con.
She did a Comic-Con panel a few years back that I went to where she talked about how she was working on her own comic book. Around the time of this wave of sort of celebrity comic books had been going. But, like, you could tell she meant it.
Right.
Because she spoke knowledgeably about stuff I didn't even know about, you know. Because I'm not a big comics nerd. That's what you are. But But I knew
I'm a small comic.
I know
fan.
From living with you who the real ones are and who they aren't. Mm. You know. And so she was a real one. Like she was talking about how like her grandmother taught her to love comic books and would give her Superman comic books to read and stuff and
she walked the walk basically.
Totally. But more than that, she was just down for whatever anybody had to ask her. Like somebody stood up and asked her if she had seen the bootleg video game that had been going around where the people from Sin City could fight the people from Rent and so that her characters could actually fight each other. And she got this like bright, maniacal look on her face. And she's like, talk to me after I have to play this game. And I when I saw her do that, I thought, you are the coolest dude alive. Like, I had already thought she was great mm-hmm. in the movies that I've seen her in and stuff. I always thought she was cool. But she cemented, like, my love for her. I feel kind of warm and fuzzy for her almost all the time. Even that weird rapey movie.
I was saying that rapey movie, too.
Even that. But at the end of that one, I'm still like, go, Rosario Dawson. Rape him. Yeah, rape him back. It was this bizarre, hard, heavy, awful, you know.
NC-17.
NC-17. Not an awful movie, necessarily, but, it's a
grim.
A grim movie about rape. Did she write it, direct it? I know she starred
it. Starred in it. Yeah. I'm not sure what else, but.
But, yeah.
Anyway, so, Zookeeper. There's a scene where Kevin James and Rosario Dawson go to this wedding, and he's trying to make his ex-girlfriend, Leslie Bibb, jealous. So they start dancing, and then there had been earlier in the reception, those acrobats that hang off the ribbons that come down from the ceiling. So like
Rick and Steve, they both do that.
Oh, Steve does it too?
Steve does it too.
Yeah, so people we know actually do this stuff. Dave and I would... You would hear the sound of ribbons ripping out of their sockets.
Super athletic people that
yeah,
we know.
You know, in the ceiling. It would be not pretty if we tried it. Anyway, so they start sort of like dancing with those things and stuff. And Kevin James winds up sort of grabbing them and like flying around the dance floor. And just as he's getting all euphoric about it, he knocks over an ice swan and then body checks the bride. And I laughed. I like that part. But generally, it's I don't know. I'm kind of over the talking animals with celebrity voices, and
I really enjoyed Maya Rudolph.
Well, it's because she was doing the toothpaste voice.
That's what I kept thinking through the whole thing, because that sketch from Saturday Night Live where she's a TSA employee,
and that they're asking them all for like examples of what would constitute a liquid,
and there's this weird long pause, and just all of a sudden, Maya Rudolph just goes. Toothpaste!
In that Maya Rudolph voice.
And I nearly peed myself laughing. And to this day, all Alonzo has to do is say that word
Any conversations about dentrifice in this house eventually lead to toothpaste!
She was great. I liked... Nick Nolte as the gorilla.
Nick Nolte as the gorilla was great. I have to say, because he brought it.
I like the bears telling him that he needed to lead with his pudding cup. Because that's what I do all the time. When I'm walking, I lead with my pudding cup. I have no choice.
I'm not even talking about this.
That's the belly. That's your belly.
Okay.
That's your pudding cup.
All right.
It's a big cup of pudding. And... Kevin James has one, in spite of how he is stretched into thin man status on the poster and billboards and ads, which is very weird. He's a fatty.
Yeah,
You're a fatty.
Let Kevin James We're be Kevin
fatties.
James.
Let him be fatties. His signed pictures near the dressing rooms at the Rochester Big and Tall in Beverly Hills, I know that because when I tried on my suit there, him, Drew Carey, Cedric the Entertainer, and other fatties, they all get their
Although Drew Carey got crazy thin.
Drew Carey got thin. That's true. I like the Adam Sandler monkey. I like all monkeys in every movie. It doesn't matter what the movie is. But I do like the part where he can't stop licking his own armpits. I like the part where the wolf pees on the tree and talks about his majestic stream.
And that is where we are different.
This is a terrible movie. I will say this. It is a terrible movie. And I could not stop from laughing.
And now, not to bring it down too much, and I don't know if this is true or not. I just saw it on Twitter, so I haven't seen actual substantiation. But
somebody, is someone dead?
Somebody said that the elephant died. No, the giraffe died and the elephant was beaten.
Who beat the elephant?
I don't know.
Did Kevin James beat the elephant?
I don't think so.
I bet Leslie Bibb beat the elephant. She seems
she
mean.
Seems the type.
She seems mean.
I like Leslie Bibb on Popular. She's got not much to do in this one.
I have a really hard time believing that the elephant was beaten on set, because they monitor that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, it might have been by the trainer, not on the set or something.
Possibly. The giraffe just dropped dead.
I saw this on Twitter. We'll have to Google it and find out what the deal is. But
at the end, all of the animals sing "Boston's More Than a Feeling." Yeah. Are you yet convinced to go buy a ticket to Zookeeper?
Yeah, I saw a couple of movies this week that you saw Better Life Without Me, and then I saw The Ledge, which is terrible.
I saw enough of it to think that it was terrible.
Yeah,
too.
It was ridiculous. Basically,
he watched it on DVD, and I was
Charlie Hunnam plays
organizing things.
Charlie Hunnam plays an atheist who's a hotel manager, and then this couple moves in down the hall from him, and it's Patrick Wilson and Liv Tyler, and they're all super Christian-y, and she gets a job working in the hotel, and they start having an affair, and he has these long conversations about faith and God with Patrick Wilson, and Patrick Wilson thinks that gay people are burning in hell, and Charlie Hunnam has a gay roommate, and it eventually it's up to Charlie Hunnam maybe jumping off a building, and maybe not. And
I like the way you're talking about this.
Yeah, I know, it's that kind of movie. And then Terrence Howard is the policeman who tries to talk him out of jumping off the building. And Terrence Howard is a Catholic, but he just found out that his wife's cheating on him because he's sterile, but they have two kids. And yeah, it's a big bowl of nothing, as Dave White would say. Yeah. So anyway, skip that one. And then I saw Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the Travels of a Tribe Called Quest. I think that's the whole title.
Is that the name of it?
And I liked it a lot. And I know less than nothing about hip-hop for the most part. But I was a De La Soul fan in the early 90s. So just seeing, young rappers wearing kente cloth again was sort of a nice little flashback. But it was fun, and you really kind of got the joy of creation and creativity that these guys got out of their music. And
you hate hip hop, by the way.
Generally, yeah. But this I found really kind of sort of joyful, and a lot of
it's Q-Tip.
A lot of it's about the clash between Q-Tip and Fife Dawg.
Q-Tip
and
makes you happy. You almost have no choice but to be happy when Q-Tip is doing his thing.
Mm. If you say so.
I say so.
Based on this movie, I would agree with you, but this is all I've got to go on. But yeah, so that was a lot of fun, and so check it out when it comes near you, even if you don't think you would like it because you like
Because me, like Alonzo Duraldi, you hate hip-hop.
so much of hip-hop is so yelly and homophobic, it just doesn't do it for me. But, but
it's yelly.
It's very yelly.
It's yelly. Some of it is homophobic. But just like the way Chris Rock talks about women who listen to hip-hop, and when he asked them, how can you listen to this? This guy hates women. And her response is, he ain't talking about me. That's how I feel about the homophobic rappers. I'm like, I like DMX. He hates gays, apparently. If you only know him via his songs, You would surmise that he does not like a good gay nearby or even in his town. However, he's talking about some other gay.
Yeah, but even if the gay he is hating on is not you, doesn't the fact that he hates gays make him somebody that you would find less appealing?
Nah.
You're a terrible person.
Again, he ain't talking about me.
Yeah. You are a self-hating homo.
No, I'm not. I love myself.
Okay, I hate you.
Quite a bit. I have no self-esteem issues whatsoever.
Then you're part of the problem.
I just like dope beats.
then listen to Caswell.
That's a great idea. I think I will.
I left. What's that? I saw Beyonce at Burger King.
Yeah, listen.
Is that his song?
I think so.
I seen. Wait, I seen Beyonce at Burger King. Yeah. And she was eating. And I bet he did see her there.
Probably. You should listen to more Goddess and She. I don't know.
I'm kidding.
Somebody was telling me that all the people that were in Pick Up the Mic, like, they all thought that movie was going to make them more famous, and they all, like, became jerks, and
they all became jerks?
That's what somebody told me that that movie had a curse on it. Like, everybody who's in that movie,
He's talking about a documentary made by a guy we know.
Yes.
Alex. And he...
About queer hip-hop.
Yeah, called Pick Up the Mic, which you should watch.
Yeah, it's a cool movie.
It's a good documentary.
Our friend Matt is in it.
And Matt is also in that documentary, yes. Our friend Matt.
What's your DVD pick this week?
My DVD pick this week is The Sacrifice.
Scott, when I ran into him at the grocery store this week, Chill at July 4th,
right.
Was telling me about how that because of this show, he is like making a list of really slow and difficult movies, like Jean Dielman.
Because of us.
Yeah, and last year, Mario.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Jean Dielman, people, I know I promised that I was going to live tweet Jean Dielman. I changed my mind.
You're all talk. I knew
I changed
it.
My mind. You know what? It's 3.5 hours of... It would be blasphemous to do it, and B, it would be 3.5 hours of me writing, now she's cracking eggs for meatloaf. Now she's working the breadcrumbs into the meatloaf. Now she is shaping the meatloaf. Squish, squish, squish goes the meatloaf.
Vacuum that living room, Jean Dielman.
Vacuum that living room, Jean Dielman. It's a fantastic movie. It's an important movie. I love this movie.
You just don't want to be watching Twitter while you're looking at it.
I just don't want to be having to pay attention to Twitter because this movie requires your concentration.
Yes, it does. Anyway, so he's got Lester Marienbad and Jean Dielman on his Netflix queue, and now he can
Uncle Boonby? Is he going to watch Uncle Boonby?
I guess.
Ask him.
Put that on your list, Chill. Uncle Boonby.
Uncle Boonby, who can recall his past lives.
And now you can also add Andrei Tarkovsky's The Sacrifice, because Dave's picking it this week.
I am going to talk about... Did I already talk about Uncle Boonby? No, I haven't yet, because that doesn't come out until next week.
Right.
So you'll get...
That can be your DVD pick next week.
Next week's DVD pick. Okay, well, this is The Sacrifice. Andrei Tarkovsky's 1986...
Final film.
Final film. Yes, I was fixing to say
fine.
That.
Fine. I'll shut up.
I know things. I saw this movie. I saw it in the theater.
Woo!
I saw it upstairs in the teeny tiny box.
Oh, at the Inwood?
At the Inwood in Dallas.
I remember seeing Lone Star there, and it actually, I think that when the title came up, it was One Star.
But let me tell you, you know what? You can hate on those little tiny boxes that they used to have upstairs at the Inwood all you want. But back in 1986, if you were in that theater, you weren't there with your damn cell phone, because they didn't have them. No. And you weren't talking and bugging other people because you were there for a reason. If you were in Dallas, Texas in 1986 going to an Andrei Tarkovsky movie, you were there because you meant to be there. You wanted to be there. You had a reason to be there, and it was because nothing else in Dallas was giving you the kind of thing that an Andrei Tarkovsky movie would give you in Dallas. I went with my very good friend at the time, Drew. I've completely lost touch with. It is about an old man who is an atheist and a psychologist, and he's got a young wife and a teenage daughter and a very little son, a very young son that he calls Little Man. And in the opening of the movie, the world is being destroyed by a nuclear holocaust. that you never really see.
Is he on like Faro or something? That Swedish island where like Bergman lived?
He might be, because this is very much his Bergman shout out.
Mm.
Like, you know, this movie. Anyway, he calls out to God and says, I will sacrifice everything. My home, my family, everything. I will give it all back. I will sacrifice all of it if you will undo the nuclear war destruction of Earth. To keep his end of the bargain, he goes and bangs a witch.
As one does.
And the next morning, he gets up,
Everything is back to normal. He doesn't know why everything is back to normal. If his, you know...
Don't give away the whole movie.
If his vow worked, if he dreamt it, he doesn't know. And then stuff happens. And it's amazing. It has 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10 minute takes. Actually, it has like a 9.5 minute shot, which is like the longest shot Tarkovsky ever did. But it is a routinely commonplace occurrence in this film for there to be sequences that are uninterrupted takes of 6, 7, and 8 minutes. So prepare yourself. You know,
tuck in.
Don't be sleepy. Don't be easily distracted. Work on your, you know, ability to focus and concentrate and pay attention, because that's what happens.
And it's now out on Blu-ray.
And it's out on Blu-ray this week. It's out on DVD too. But
yeah,
it's amazing, and you should totally watch it.
All right, now out from Kino Video. My DVD pick this week is kind of the polar opposite of that. It's Trailers from Hell, Volume 2. And it's from the website Trailers from Hell. And it's all of these great old B-movie trailers. And with kind of optional commentary tracks from people like Guillermo del Toro and John Landis and Roger Corman and Joe Dante and Josh Olson. And, you know, they're a lot of fun if you are a fan of you know, junky old movies and of sort of the cool kind of contemporary B-movie guys, like, you know, the ones still around and the ones who are still making movies along those lines, you'll have fun with it. And if you live in L.A., I believe CineFamily is doing, like, a live event with a lot of those people I just mentioned and Dan Waters and a bunch of other guys.
Are they going to show
one? They're going to show trailers and they're going to talk. They're going to do sort of like a live commentary thing.
Oh, they're not going to show one of the actual movies, though?
Maybe. There might be sort of like a surprise thing thrown in as well, but for the most part, they're showing trailers with these guys. So that's going to be really cool. But anyway, the Trailers from Hell Volume 2, it's out from Shout Factory. And as an added bonus, they threw in the original The Little Shop of Horrors. So, so that's this week. Yeah, Outfest is still going on here in L.A., and that's keeping me busy, and if you are in the Los Angeles area, you should check it out. There's a lot of great movies this week. As always, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you're thinking. And we did have a couple people who responded to us about the whole, do straight women mind if
I got those emails.
Straight men look at porn.
And apparently they do.
Yeah. Or not. I mean, one was from a woman.
One of them is from a woman I know personally, yes, a friend of mine, yes, who was like, I don't care. She goes, in fact, I'm glad,
right, that he gives me some free time.
But seriously, like, it's a thing that I just don't. I mean, because let's get back to the Cinnabon. porn is a Cinnabon. That's it. It's like, it's a Cinnabon. For guys, that's what it is. Porn is a cinema.
In that it's not really food.
In that it's just a, it's a, it's a,
it's a momentary distraction.
It's a momentary distraction, a convenient placeholder, and a small treat in your day, you know. So yeah,
The jokes write themselves. I'm not going to say them. Anyway, quick shout out to our friends in Podcastlandia, the Popcorn Mafia, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Secretly Timid,
many other podcasts,
Blowhard,
all of them,
the podcast, the Criterion Cast, Fat Guys Go to the Movies, and a new one that I've been listening to that I don't think you've heard yet. Our friend Drew Drogi does a very funny podcast called Glitter in the Garbage. Oh. A lot of improv comedy in it, but he also,
I've never met him. Really? You know him?
I know, you're him, like, pretty well, yeah.
Pals?
Yeah.
I've never met him.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Anyway, Drew Drogi, if you've ever seen the guy who does Chloe...
You get out of the house more. That's true.
The guy who does Chloe Sevigny and Tanya Roberts on YouTube, he's super funny, and he does this weekly podcast.
He's a funny dude. Those Chloe Sevigny things are pretty funny.
So Glitter in the Garbage, check it out. And again, if you like this show, tell your friends. We're trying to goose our numbers here a bit.
Tell everybody to listen to it.
And go to iTunes and leave us a nice review. And we thank you for listening, and we will be here next time.
Bye.